Hello, beautiful people, and welcome to another episode of Hopes and Dreams with the Blendium Project. I'm your host and founder, Jonah Batumzi, and today we'll be discussing mixed identities. As of the 2020 U.S. Census, almost 34 million people identified as being more than one race. This trend, along with a low birth rate and immigration, has shown that the future is multiracial. Today, we're joined by none other than Dr. Jennifer Noble, an African-American Sri Lankan clinical psychologist from the California School of Professional Psychology. She has two specialty areas, children and adolescents, teens, and multiracial community clinical psychology. Let's get into it.
All right, I'm excited.
I'm excited too. So everybody, welcome to this conversation. We haven't done one of these for a very long time. During the pandemic, we were doing these bi-weekly and just speaking with people from the community, people doing, amazing work, people doing work to support and uplift the community. And so we've known each other for a while. Jen, we've been wanting to kind of meet up and talk and just try to see what other resources we could perhaps put together that the community may find helpful. Yeah. And not even explicitly for people who are in blending relationships, I think. You know, you could be a Black person, you could be a South Asian person, you could be African, you could be Caribbean. I think it's really valuable and important information that you are talking about that would resonate with a lot of people. So why don't I stop talking and hand over to you and allow you to introduce yourself and tell us a bit about your work.
Okay. All right. Well, hi, everyone. I am Jennifer Noble. I'm Dr. Jen online. And I'm a psychologist and a parent coach. I still am. I should also add that I'm a professor of psychology out here at a local college. So I teach psychology classes there. A little bit about my work is, seeing basically marginalized folks in my private practice, I specialize in mixed race identities. So a lot of my clients in my private practice are either mixed race adults, mixed race adolescents, and then they're an adolescent, then I work really closely with the parents. Outside of that, I've done a lot of advocacy work for the mixed race community. There's an organization in California, or it was started in California. It's called the Multiracial Americans of Southern California. And I've been involved with them for, I don't even know how many years, but a long time. And the organization's been around for a long time. So I was president, past president, and now I'm an advisory board member. And the work that they do is they serve couples, mixed race folks, and, transracial adoptees. So that's a little bit about me, and like at least the work that I do.
Yeah. So just a quick question before, because I'd love to know a bit about your background and things like that, but do you feel like there is what's it like in this space professionally? Is there a lot of work and a lot of studies being taken place, or is there a lot of interest, or is it that you don't find a lot of people who are working here and you're one of the only ones in this swim lane, or what's it like professionally?
So I think that's a great question, and that's, it kind of ties into why I do some of the work that I do. There's a lot of research on mixed race identity. There's a lot of research on interracial couples. There's a lot of research on transracial adoptees. From like 40, 50 years or more, there's research studies that have been looking on everything that you could imagine from mixed race identity. And it's gone international. There's research on mixed race folks in the UK and all over Europe, in Australia. I mean, you name the country, people are like, let's look at mixed race experience in Japan. But for me, so I would say I am definitely not the only one. I am one of many, many, many. And I often look to some of like my mentors who did a whole bunch of work, and I read their stuff and I'm like, nobody knows, unless you're an academic, you might not know that this study existed or this information is existing. And so one of the things I always try to do is take the research and then translate it for everybody else, because I'm like, with social media, I see so many people online that are like, I feel like maybe my identity is this. And I'm like, yeah, someone found that a long time ago. Like, like people are studying that. You're not the first one to think that. So I kind of just want to bring that awareness to everyone. And there is a journal. There's something called the Critical Mixed Race Studies Journal. And so they're always publishing stuff. So it's good for people to know that that's out there.
Cool. And what about you? What's your background? Sorry.
Yeah. What, so
that's the like loaded question that everybody's like, I hate it when people ask me that. But tell us a bit about yourself. What's your background?
Yeah. So my background is I am African American and Sri Lankan Tamil. And then I was born and raised in Cali, born by the beach. And I always say I'm a diehard Cali fanatic. But yeah, that's my simplest background.
Okay, cool. And what was, without making this all about you, while making it all about you, what was adolescence like? What was it like growing, I guess, with those two different backgrounds? I think, sorry, one other thing I'll say is, so I guess where I'm sitting at, and for people who don't know, or any people who are new here, you know, the Blending Project, social impact media platform and a community for people, initially started with Black and Indian couples, specifically widened out to Black and South Asian solidarity building type platform. So I also found out some interesting things that, you know, it's not just people who are interested in these relationships, but there may also be people who are in, you know, different caste relationships, different religion relationships, but based off of the stories that people say, the vulnerability and what people are sharing, it resonates with a wide group of people. Right. So one of the questions that's often thrown about is, you know, the challenges of raising mixed race children going to be confused. How are they going to function as they grow older? Yeah, what was it like for you then, growing up in adolescence as well, too?
Yeah, well, you know, I always say everybody has such a unique experience, but there definitely are some shared things across the board. But for me, my experience was when I walked outside of the house, everybody just saw a little Black girl, you know, like, no matter, I'm thinking of little kid, but, you know, even now, when I'm seen, I'm viewed as monoracial African American, and so I'm treated that way. I think from a very young age, I had to learn that, you know, like I had to learn, like, oh, okay, this is how everybody sees me, and this is all they see. Okay, that's interesting, because then I go home and I, you know, take off my shoes at the house, and then, you know, have some rice and curry for dinner, and I'm like, people don't know this. Then I. Everybody else has rice every day. I don't know, you know. So that contrast of like knowing who my mother was, and maybe having friends say, "Oh, your house always smells so good," I'd be like, "What does my house smell like?" You know. But I didn't notice it because it was normal to me. But for them, you know, you just start to get these sense of like, okay, something is different here. And so I think for me and my experience and upbringing, it just made me be really aware, because then I started to compare and contrast a lot in my mind. I'd be like, okay, you walk in my house and say it smells a certain way. What does your house smell like? And why? Why doesn't your house smell like mine? Oh, okay. So the foods I eat are different. Oh, got it. You know what I mean? Like I would put things like that together. And then with all the different experiences of how people interacted with me, how they talked to me, I started to, like I said, just kind of really taking this idea of like, all right, you don't see this, you know, Sri Lankan part of me, but it's so, you know, maybe I'll figure out when to show that to you, but I'm just registering.
Yeah.
Aha, you don't see
it. And sorry, you said something interesting as well too, but I mean, know it as fact as well too. So when did you think that you started identifying, you know, as a Black girl or a Black woman? Because you said that was kind of something very early on that you realized that's how people were going to view you in the world.
I mean, I hesitate to say that I really ever did only, you know, but I certainly, once I realized this is how the world treats me and sees me, then I said, all right, well, then that's definitely a group where I know I'm going to find belonging. So I would say definitely high school, I was, you know, I think there was a girl that invited me to, I don't know how everybody's high schools are, but, you know, there's like black table, you know, so yeah. Like, okay, you know, let me go hang out with my people, you know, but
yeah,
our school was actually not very diverse. So our black people.
So you are only going to go to one table anyway. You
yeah, gonna go to one table. And our black table had Samoans, Filipino, you know, like it was all the marginalized minorities, I guess, but majority black. But yeah, so I mean, it was like, I understood that. I was good with that. It made sense to me. It fit with me. You know, there was nothing that I was forcing about it. It was just like, okay, that's easy. There was not a big South Asian population. So it wasn't like I had a choice of like, well, do I go to the Sri Lankan table or the, you know, black table? The two Sri Lankans that went to my high school were at the black table. Let's put it that way. So I ended up meeting them anyway, you know?
Yeah, yeah. Just another thing I'm curious about then as well too, because you mentioned there weren't many South Asians then. How close and how much do you embrace your Sri Lankan Tamil background, and when did that become something that maybe you had more of an appreciation for?
Yeah. So I feel like that's two separate questions. When did I embrace
it? It is. Yeah.
I embraced it always because I was always seeing family. I was always just like I always tell people, my mother didn't know anything better than to create a Sri Lankan home. She might live in a different country, but she was like, this is just what we're going to do. And so I followed suit with all of those practices, you know? And it wasn't even a question. It was like, oh, this is probably what everybody does in their house. And then if I would go and see family, they all did it too. So I'm like, oh yeah, this is probably how everybody lives. So in that sense, I embraced it always. But when did it have more meaning to me was definitely in high school when we made our first trip to Sri Lanka. We went to go see my auntie who was still living there, and I met one of my cousins that was living there still. And my mom and I still kind of talk about how, like, before we left, you know, let's say I was 14 or something, and I was kind of like, if you travel, especially that far, you're not going for 1 week. You got to go for like 3 weeks, whatever. And so I think she said I was complaining like, oh, I have to miss, you know, like I want to be here. It's summer and all that kind of like kitty complaints. But then when I was there, she, you know, and then I came home, she's like, oh, now you want to be, you know, all Sri Lankan and stuff, huh? You know, because I think that experience was, it was for me, I remember going to a place where everybody was Sri Lankan and they all did what I already knew my family to do. But my family, they usually lived in the UK or in Australia. Or so there was always this feeling of like, they're this smaller example. But when you go and you're like, oh, the whole country does it this way. Like, oh, this is like, I just felt a connection of like, oh, this is what has been done for a long, long time. The things that maybe I took for granted or didn't fully understand, it really gave it context when I saw a whole country that kind of like functioned that way. And so after that, I really had a real strong connection to the identity of like, I am also, I always knew it and I always embraced it, but ooh, okay, now I'm gonna grasp it. So from then on into college, it was something I asserted a lot more.
I love that. A couple things I think about is, I remember the first trip that when we were going to Uganda, and I must have been like seventh or eighth grade, so I was like 11 or 12. And
yeah.
I played on the basketball team, and it just so happened that the timing was during like basketball season. So I remember just having the biggest tantrum because I had to miss a couple games to go back. But you know, going back was so powerful for me, taught me so many different lessons in terms of just being thankful and just recognizing how privileged I was and we were to actually be growing up in a place with, mm-hmm. You know, electricity all the time and nice roads and just little things that you really take for granted. And then the other thing that I thought about is there was, you know, they're like the duty-free stores in the airports that sell different goods and things like that. And there were dolls there, and all of the dolls were black. And it was just, it was like the thing you're talking about. Everyone was Sri Lankan there. So that's what they know. They make Sri Lankan dolls. They're not making it for anybody else. And in Uganda, it was like all of the dolls were just black. And, you know, I just, that was just so powerful when I saw that. And it will just stick with me. But okay, cool. Thank you for sharing that bit about yourself then. So we put these, we put a couple slides together. We, like I said, have been talking about trying to work together for a while and bring some of this good information to the community. So we put a couple slides together. You want to talk about these slides? You were talking about racial identity and a bit about culture in these slides.
Yeah. Well, so where do you want me to start?
Let's start racial identity. Yeah.
Well, I mean, I guess what we can say is, you know, racial identity is just so complex, right? It's just, there's so many pieces to it. I was kind of thinking, you know, it's just one small aspect of like who we are overall. We have so many different aspects of our identity, but, you know, depending on where you live, depending on the structure and how they view race and ethnicity, it really ends up being a very salient part of someone's identity where you're sort of forced to like reckon with it, even if you weren't really planning on it. The rest of society's like, yeah, you need to figure that out so that I can know, you know what I mean? So I think there's a lot of pressure in navigating racial identity because we are all expected to do race or like perform race a certain way. And to me, at least, because I love racial identity and racial identity development. There's like lots of different models and research on it. Mm-hmm. But the way that I would, you know, kind of put it down into like a smaller bite-sized piece is that there's a way that everybody expects us to perform race, and racial identity is figuring out, all right, how do I want to do it? You know, everybody else is saying, oh, to be black, you got to do 1, 2, and 3. And you don't do that. You don't know that movie. You don't know how to dance or whatever. Mm-hmm. And then at some point you got to be like, hold on, you know, like I could try all my life to do it the way you expect me to do it. But at some point I got to see what's real for me, what's authentic for me, and let it come from the inside out, how we do racial identity. And then of course that gets influenced by all the other aspects of our identity. You know, you've got this piece of, for example, what you're mentioning is like parents who immigrated. So it's like, there's another piece of your identity that has to be navigated into like, okay, well, how does that impact my racial identity? Having like, you know, we're both first gen, you know, essentially. So it's like, that's a whole other aspect that makes race be done a little differently, you know? And then you got gender, sexual orientation, income level. I mean, you name it, Chicago versus California, you know, all that kind of stuff starts to just, it's like layered and complex. We have to figure all that out, but all of it has an impact on how we do race, you know?
Sure. And are there any, like, have you found any keys or cheat codes, I guess, to people kind of unlocking and becoming more comfortable with their racial identity?
Yeah, I mean, I think one of the, I guess, the cheat code is really cultural exposure is one of the strongest ones. It's like, if you think about it, it's kind of logical. It's hard to bring something from the inside out if you never had anybody put anything in, you know? So the idea of being exposed and learning all the nuances of like your people, your culture, your, you know, music, art, history, you name it, food. If you didn't have exposure to that, it's harder to be like, well, then how am I gonna do my version of it? I don't know. I don't have anything to pull from personally, you know? But I think it's, you know, how we get socialized in that sense is really, really important.
Okay. And I know you've been doing this work for a while. Have you seen any type of an increase in people wanting to explore racial identity, or I guess even just come to you for your work? Have you noticed any changes over the last couple of years?
Yeah, I think so. I think racial identity, like I said, I think identity overall, people are really excited to talk about or interested to talk about, especially maybe one generation younger, because maybe we're so exposed to so many people now from all over the globe. It sort of forces you to be like, oh, well, how am I the same or different from all these different people that I'm meeting? And so then it just forces those internal questions. So I do think many more people are caring about racial identity. I would say that folks that have European ancestry, you know, they're really looking a lot more inward at like white identity and what does it mean to sort of be white in these various countries. And so I on the whole, yes, I do think so. And then especially mixed race, as we have more and more numbers of mixed race folks, there's a lot more discussion of like, how do I identify? How will I present myself in the world? How will these groups, you know, how will I interact with these groups? How will those groups respond to me? I mean, it's just much bigger discussion today, I think.
Yeah, really interesting times. I think there's this kind of like 20, I don't know if it's 2050 or 2030, but you see these dates kind of thrown around all the time when, you know, the balance is supposed to shift from white people being the majority to it being, you know, mixed race or just people of color. So it feels like it's just really interesting times. And my personal feeling is a lot of the stuff that happened in 2020, you know, with the BLM protests and marches as well too, it really made people want to it really made people want to be the true version of themselves. Not just at home, but everywhere and in work and in different places, and just not have to hide who they are. So so I think that it's I think it's a good time to be in this space or to be talking about these different types of things and exploring these.
Yeah, I think so. I think it's a good time. It's a better opportunity to experiment with this idea of like being more public and visible with one's identity. It's even a little bit, well, I don't know if it's safer, but I think it's a much more opportunity to do so. Let's put it that way.
Okay. Right. And then we started talking about one other thing, and I haven't even really shared this, but we started talking about culture as a superpower, which I, you actually shared something, which I'm going to share with the community a bit later on.
But,
I really liked what you were saying, because I think in the slide pack as well, too, there are a couple different points that you mentioned about how, and I think you were talking explicitly about mixed race people at that point in time. But for me, I feel like it's kind of can be the same type of thing, because I can be one particular race, but also be exposed to different cultures that I therefore can then adopt to myself as well too.
Yeah. I mean, in a way, what you're saying is like, maybe cultural exposure is a superpower, you know, and that the more everybody is exposed to different cultures and interacts and makes connections, we all benefit. And it's not to say that all mixed race people are automatically more culturally exposed, because sometimes they're not, you know. So they may not have a connection to one side of their heritage or one of the cultures in their background. But yeah, the overarching thing is cultural exposure is the secret.
Agree. I agree with you. When I just think about my life and experiences that I've had, it's been exposure to other cultures, whether that's languages, fashion, rituals, festivals, that have just really taken, I think, some of the, I don't want to say negativity, but when you actually don't know something, you're a bit fearful. You could be a bit fearful at times. But as you start to learn and know and educate yourself more about what they actually mean, and you can participate in a different way. I feel like it makes it more just something easier to attain, just something easier to be close to.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, if you look at any of the, I'm just thinking of the States, but I think it applies kind of around the world. But at least in the United States, the states where they have more diversity, especially from a young age, those are kids that are, you know, they have that superpower of like having more empathy, or, you know, standing up for marginalized groups, or just feeling like they can be comfortable in many different surroundings and not feel kind of, oh my gosh, I don't understand this group. You can see that more in like the Hawaii's, the California's, the New York's, you know. It's not like they're all perfect places to be, but in the states where there is much less diversity, there is much less ability to have that empathy for other groups, feeling comfortable for crossing those borders and all that stuff.
Really important points, I think, and I like the point about the empathy as well, too. It reminds me of... you know, we do workshops as well too, and in part of this workshop pack, I always refer to some article that I read by bell hooks, and you know, when she's talking about love, it's like a genuine love, and it's about, you know, being empathetic and thinking about people that you may not know directly or immediately, or they don't need to live by you, but you're still in some way tied to their pain, suffering, and oppression. And that's very much what it feels like, this empathy that you're talking about, that people are able to gain by, you know, being exposed to different cultures and to different people and, you know, different classes of people, etc.
Yeah. So maybe one of the superpowers of culture is like love, more love.
Yeah. Well, cool. Thank you for that. Is there anything else that you'd like to share? Are there any questions, I guess, from anybody in the audience here?
I can't see anything when I scroll on the questions. I thought I saw somebody's comment earlier.
But are there any questions? Does anyone have any questions in the audience? Tell me what it was like growing up Desi and Cali.
I'm sorry, you kind of cut out there.
Oh, sorry. Tell me what it was like growing up Desi and Cali in California.
Well, for me, I mean, I don't know that Sri Lankans classify themselves that way. Like, but there's just not a lot of California is so spread out, Southern California. And where I lived, there was very, very few. Like I said, it was a brother and sister who I met in high school. But I will say there are pockets where there's like a lot of Sri Lankans, but we just weren't that connected. It was like about an hour and a half away. So really growing up for me, Sri Lankan and Cali was like, I didn't really meet that many people at all. We didn't do a lot of Sri Lankan parties and socializing on the weekend because we were very, very far from that community. So for me growing up in Cali was like, I knew what it was like to be Sri Lankan, and then I get to express that when I go and see my cousins and my family in countries, you know, until high school. And then in high school, I had my, you know, he and I were in the same class. We would joke together. We could make, you know, we could talk about foods. And it was like the first time I could be like, oh, you know about that? Or what about this? And, you know, make jokes. And everybody else was like, what are they talking about? I'm like, don't worry about it, you know. But yeah, since then, once I got into grad school and I came to LA, I was able to meet a lot more, you know, folks that were Sri Lankan, and then we were just friends and we would go hang out and do stuff and maybe even do like Sri Lankan New Year or just any excuse to get together and like make food and have fun, you know. So it was a more, there was a different experience finding it later, but it wasn't something that I grew up around. Although I would say that probably more Sri Lankans out here, they probably grew up in one of the little pockets, like either in the valley or up in Lancaster or something like that. But I was much further away.
Okay.
Yeah. What about you? Was it in Chicago? Is there, I know there's like a lot.
No, I mean, I was, so yeah. So I say Chicago, where I, where I actually, like, my adolescence and things like that was a place called Bloomington Normal, which is directly, it's right in between St. Louis and Chicago. It is cornfields. It is white. It is conservative. It is,
yeah.
So yeah. And when I was growing up as well too, and I always tell people this, there was no Afro beats. Afro beats was not around. So the whole concept of what it meant to be from Africa or African was completely different. Like I think about coming to America time, you know, and people like that being their reference point, not thinking about like WizKid and, you know, what people can think about, you know, Africa being today.
No, you're right. It was much more, there was a lot more negative connotations and yeah, there was a lot less knowledge. I think that's true for Sri Lanka too. I mean, when I was growing up, if you said Sri Lanka, they'd be like, where's that? Oh, you know, oh, is that like India? No, India is India. Sri Lanka is like, you know, like they just would try to find some reference, but no one ever knew what it was until MIA, right? Until she came on the scene and had her little blow up moment. And then everybody knows where I'm like, thank you very much for putting us on the map.
Yeah, it's funny how that happens, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah.
Well, cool. Thank you very much. I have I've really enjoyed the conversation. Everybody, if you check our IG grid, there's a couple slide pack that you put together, and I encourage everybody to follow your page, check out your work. I know you've been doing some other things. On what have you been posting about recently?
Well, I have, my other things are just the coaching that I do for parents. So I have one-on-one coaching with parents of mixed race kids. And then sometime in the fall, I'll be starting my, it's kind of like, it's called the Mixed Life Academy. And it's going to be a place for parents of mixed race kids to come and get education from me, coaching, but also have a community to meet each other and really kind of talk with each other about trying to be intentional about raising mixed race kids with a healthy racial identity. So those are the two big things that I've been working with to really kind of, like I said, bring all the research and knowledge and work that I do, bring it to the families who need the information, you know? So, yeah.
One last thing. Is there anything really interesting going on in the research side or the academic world that has really interested you or caught your eye or just, make you kind of sit up? Or
I mean, there's always new things that I find, you know, interesting, but to me, I think there's just a lot more research on mixed race folks with dual minority backgrounds, and that's always been an interest of mine, because a lot of times the research tends to focus on white other mixed race, sometimes white black, white Asian, you know, whatever. But we see a lot less of like other mixed race. And so I would always go to the research and try to be like, you know, find something that has to do with my experience. And it was sometimes difficult. But, you know, there's a long time ago when I was like in college and stuff, I would see stuff on like black Japanese mix. There's a lot of research then. But now we just have so much more research on all different types of mixed race groups, and I just think that that's great because there's more visibility, more recognition, you know, more learning that we're doing.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, I'm gonna close on this. I mean, I've met so many people in this community who say the same thing, whether it's I thought I was the only one or I was the only one in this relationship, and you know, now we've grown to a community, you know, circa kind of 25k. So I think it's, you know, just beautiful. It's just beautiful to see yourself, to see representation, to find community, to find other people who may have lived something similar about, you know, thousands of miles away. So thank you. And thank you for your work. And I hope that we can, you know, bring you back and have some more regular these sessions. So thank you.
Thank you. for your work, I definitely, I already sent your flyer out to the people I emailed to go to the carnival.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. For anybody listening, we have the carnival coming up in New York City on the 23rd of June. There are a couple of posts on here. We're going to be talking about it a little bit later on, closer to the day. But look, just looking to bring our people together, looking to engulf ourselves in Black and Brown joy. So thank you very much.
Yeah.
I will speak and see everybody soon.